Never seen something like that in my life. He was so composed on big points, so he was way too good for me tonight.
Hello and welcome to the AO Show. Day two at the Australian Open, and another big day. It was warm weather and a beautiful evening as I stand out here in Garden Square. A lovely way to end the day. On today's show, behind the Yonex stringing team.
To know that the player is appreciating what you're doing and that you're helping them as part of their team, that's the buzz you get.
And we hear about the brand new sports film festival at the AO.
I'm very excited to be able to combine two of my biggest passions, tennis and film, and put this together.
Plus, more reaction from Andy Murray's Oz Open exit. But we start today with the battle of the big servers, Nick Kyrgios and Milos Raonic. Raonic progressing to the second round while Kyrgios struggled with a knee injury throughout the match. Here's what Raonic had to say on court after the match.
It's tough really to be able to say too much because it comes down to a few points here and there. I'm very glad I served well. That was incredibly important. I got a little fortunate on a few opportunities that I had, and you know, that discipline paid off throughout the whole match. I'm glad that I got some support in here. I know you guys were very supportive of your own, as you should be. Thank you. And you know, it's on to the next one.
On the other side, Nick Kyrgios wasn't blaming his knee injury for his performance, giving full credit to Raonic.
I don't think that was at all the reason I lost today. He played unbelievable. Unbelievable serving. Never seen serving like that in my life. I've never been a part of it. I was just watching it, literally going side to side. I was trying to mix up where I was standing, trying to move before doing like illegal, trying to just do anything. He was just in such a good rhythm. On serve, I couldn't do anything, so he was way too good tonight. Every time I made a return, he served and volleyed. He volleyed unbelievable. He was so composed on big points. He made returns, jagged returns on big points on my serve, so he was way too good for me tonight.
Also on day two, two-time Oz Open champion Victoria Azarenka was defeated by Ziegemund. Tim Solly spoke to commentator Steve Pearce for his reaction.
Steve, Azarenka knocked out today, first round, past champion. What's your initial thoughts and reactions to that?
Well, it's always a bit of a shock. And I think for people who come to Melbourne Park frequently or just follow, you know, the tournament around the world, it's always going to stick out as a bit of a shock. But Victoria has never got back to the sort of level that she was at before she stopped playing for a period to have a child. She's had some difficulties since then as well. So it shapes as a big shock for Victoria to lose to someone like Ziegemund. But Ziegemund herself, you know, is a pretty handy player, and she showed today that she can mix it with the top players. And Azarenka, certainly not anywhere near her best for those who remember, you know, when she went all the way to winning the title. So it's a shock, but certainly more in name than in current form, because Azarenka's ranking is hovering around the 50s at the moment. So she's certainly not performing in the highest echelons of the game at the moment.
Get it over the net! And Laura Ziegemund has delivered the biggest win of her career. She has ousted the twice champion Victoria Azarenka in the first round. She wins.
What was it out on court there that you saw from Azarenka? Was it ground stroking? What specifically didn't go right for her today?
I think she certainly made too many errors. She seemed to almost lose patience with her own game at times. I mean, she was a set and a break to the good, and she just seemed to try and force it a bit too much for me. She wasn't willing to tough out the victory. I think she almost maybe wanted it a bit easily. She wanted to end the points a bit too quickly against a woman who was really standing toe-to-toe with her. And okay, in her heyday, Azarenka would have probably wiped her off court because she was a higher-level player a couple of years ago. But now, the same shots that she once was hitting 90%, 95% of the time, it's a much lower conversion rate. And she was missing a lot today. And she made it easier for Ziegemund than she should have done.
Steve, great to chat, and look forward to chatting you more during the tournament.
Terrific. Thanks, Tim.
Speaking to media following the match, Azarenka focused on her inability to take her chances today. Here's what she had to say.
I think today was very obvious that my game was not there. Even though I still created chances to win the match, I didn't take any of those opportunities, which is extremely disappointing. So I don't think she's done anything extremely difficult, it's rather than me not doing anything really there.
Well, the conversation around Andy Murray continues today, and the AO radio team reflected on his first round exit from the Australian Open. Bridget Duclos, Richard Evans and Sandy Howitt spoke about Murray's character and the respect he receives from his fellow players on the tour.
Andy Murray is very special. We've known that in the game for a long time. But
as a viewer, we don't see that.
You were saying that and I've met so many who believe like you did, that because of the way he behaves on court and why he's always berating himself and he wears the wrong clothes, they're often dark, and he presents a sort of dark presence on court, which is very sad and very unfair, really, because he's a funny, nice guy with the driest sense of humour. If you're not a Scot, it goes right over your head most of the time. But he's a thoroughly good guy on many levels, as the women's locker room sort of really joined in that tribute to him last night after he lost in five amazing sets.
Pleased to hear that, because he really does come across, if you don't know, if you don't have the inside knowledge, as quite dour and quite dark.
The thing I like the best about Andy, and I think Richard will confirm this, is he's just a normal person. I mean, I remember when he first had the first child and everything, people were like going, oh, did you take your own hotel room? Because they traveled when the kid was like 6 weeks old or whatever. He goes, what do you mean? I'm half of the parents here. I wake up and I take my share of the night feedings. And yes, I'm tired. And yes, I'm going to go on the court.
But
tired,
I'm a father.
But I'm a father. Mm. He is the most normal guy, and it's so wonderful. Well, I just hope he finds his path.
I think you've got to give Judy a lot of credit. You know, she is British tennis. Yeah. She has produced two world number ones or two players who become number one in the world and won Wimbledon in singles and doubles. And she works her socks off for British and particularly Scottish tennis. And she's produced other players who played well. She's an amazing woman.
What do you think his place will be in tennis history, Sandy?
Well, I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer without a doubt. I mean, he's won three Grand Slams. He won back-to-back Olympic gold medals. He won the Davis Cup. He was number one in the world. He was the first player from Britain for 77 years to win Wimbledon. And Richard can certainly tell you, they were waiting a long time. And, you know, poor Tim Hemming, he almost got him there, but not quite good enough. So, you know, I mean, I think there's no doubt of who he is. I mean, I just hope he makes the decision that he could live with what to do about this hip, because he has options and he's really going to have to sit down and decide, because you could see him hesitate a little bit.
No, he's hesitating. He'll think about it for a couple of weeks.
The Yonex swinging team is one of the most vital components of the Oz Open, helping the players to get the most out of their rackets. Tim Solly spoke to Steve Harris to learn more.
My name's Steve Harris, and I'm here as part of the Yonex official stringing team.
What is the role of a stringer here at the Australian Open?
Our job is mainly to make sure that the players get the equipment that they want, they need to play their matches the way they can do it best. So our job is to fulfil their desires as far as their racket's concerned.
So how do you fulfil their desires?
We get a brief from the player regarding what they want, what they look for, what changes they want to make, and we make that happen for them so that they get the equipment that is going to suit their style of game in these conditions.
So tell me about some of the requests you might get as a stringer.
Yeah, a lot of it is to do with time pressure. So some players like to get their rackets done just before a match, so they're really fresh off the machine, and then they go out on court. They put a lot of demands on the stringer to meet deadlines. Others like them strung well in advance, and therefore they want them to relax a little bit so that they feel more comfortable with them. There are stringers, for example, that have a player who's notorious for doing lots of rackets during a match. Rafa Nadal, Kane Nishikori are these sort of players, and therefore that stringer is on demand and on call whenever the player is on court. So yeah, stuff happens when they're on court.
So would a player come in here and get X amount of rackets just restrung for the game, and then they go out and they say, this is what I'm using for the game? Or are you really working on the move and they're out there on the court going, this racket's too tightly strung, I need something a bit looser? Or what's the process behind that?
You'll get some players, if I use a few as an example, a guy like Rafa Nadal has the same tension, same string every time, but he likes the rackets to be changed as the conditions change, because these guys are going to play five-hour matches, maybe more. So they need to cover that entire period. And in Melbourne, 5 hours from, say, a 7 o'clock start till midnight is a very big difference in temperature and climate climate and conditions. So Rafa will actually ask, he'll get, say, three rackets done for practice. He'll then get maybe six rackets done for a match. But he'll leave three more rackets with us here in the room that he'll tell the umpire, I need another one of those rackets or two of those rackets. We'll string them up. They'll go out on court. And then he'll use them, or he'll have the preference to use them. He may not immediately pull them out of the bag, but if conditions change or the match gets long, he wants a couple of freshies.
Tell me some stories about your relationships with the players.
You do a lot with players where players like your work and they keep coming back to you, or you've done them for consecutive tournaments. They're very comfortable with what you do. Even if they're making changes, they know the changes are measurable to them. So last night I'm walking back from a late dinner and John Millman came up behind me, grabbed me from behind and said, yeah, thanks, mate, for the work you did. I played really well. I said, "How you look like you were hitting it great." He said, yeah, I'm feeling really good. We just keep going. So that's nothing major. Like, it's not like a major congratulations or anything, but to know that the player is appreciating what you're doing and that you're helping them as part of their team, that's the buzz you get. Because I've got a list of players that I'm working for, Ash Barty being one, Johnny Millman, Dimonor, like these kids I've worked with for many, many years, and I feel like a bit of a father figure. Yeah, these are my kids. I'm looking after them. Yeah, so I'm keen, any chance I get, I'm going to sit there and watch them on TV and follow their game and just see how they're going.
Steve, it's been a fascinating chat. You're a great man, and all the best for the rest of the tournament. No doubt you're going to be a very busy man and those fingers are going to get a workout.
Thanks, mate.
What does the perfect tennis shot sound like?
It's sort of like a pop, donk,
pop.
Oh, a nice poppy one. I like that.
I don't know.
What's your best impersonation of an umpire?
Forte. Thirte. Fault.
Deuce.
Out.
In Spanish is better. Can I do it in Spanish?
You can do it in Spanish.
Okay. 30, 40. Punto para Manuel.
Oh no, this is not correct. When I am calling the shot, it is out, it is out.
Game, set, match.
Shut up, please.
Come on!
Hell yeah! Woohoo!
Yes!
Come on!
I'm probably going to cry.
Were they quiet tears coming out?
They were very quiet tears.
I could hear them in the distance.
New this year at the Australian Open is a sports film festival. Jeff Field spoke to project lead Cheryl for the lowdown.
Can you tell us a bit about your festival?
So for the first time ever, the Australian Open will host the first ever Australian Open Sports Film Festival. Throughout the 2 weeks of the Open, we'll be screening over 50 movies across 23 sports at three locations on site. They are AO Ballpark, where we'll be screening kids' movies, The Glass House, where we'll have a premium indoor screening experience, and AO Tennis Club, where we'll be hosting outdoor screenings in the evenings.
So where did this idea come about?
It came about when I realised that in the last couple of years there had been a surge in sports-related content, especially in the movie industry. The likes of Battle of the Sexes, I, Tonya, The Fighter, and of course all-time classics like the Rocky franchise, Hoop Dreams, the great documentary on basketball, ESPN Films. I'm very excited to be able to combine two of my biggest passions, tennis and film, and put this together. So it's been a really fun journey working on the curation of the program, using my understanding of the event to create different experiences at the three locations that we have. So it's been a really good and rewarding journey so far.
What sort of tennis films do we have?
We have quite a few. So given that we are a Grand Slam tournament, every day across the three locations, we'll have at least one tennis movie. So we have the likes of Better the Sexes. We have documentaries on some of the absolute tennis legends like Chris Evert, Martina Navratilova, etc. We have Venus and Serena, obviously a really good documentary that came out a couple of years ago on the Williams sisters. So quite a lot of tennis content as well, even though it's a film festival celebrating sports in general.
That's fantastic. Thanks for your time, Cheryl. And let's go to the movies.
And that will do it for day two from Melbourne Park. Thanks to you for listening. I'm off to get some rest and I'll speak to you tomorrow for day three.